Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Icarus for Reality with Shane Jones.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep, open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and in today's discussion, we ponder the idea of disclosure and what the true intentions could possibly be behind it all, and if these beings are actually as they appear, and what the religious tie-in's motivation could possibly be. But before we get into this awesome conversation today, of course, I have to fly through the front of house stuff. So if you guys aren't already following the show on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, or Discord, highly recommend that you do, especially jumping into the Discord. I want to make sure that we build up an awesome community in there, and it's continuously growing every day. And the only way you can ever know what all that fun's about is if you hop in and help out. So anything that you guys hop in, follow, all that, greatly appreciated. So don't forget to do that if you haven't already. And if anybody's interested in being a guest on the show or having me as a guest on your show possibly, or if you're interested in sponsoring the show in some way, shape, or form, definitely get a hold of me. The best means of doing so is through Instagram, Facebook, or through the email or submission form that's available on the link tree. If you guys are going to email me, that is inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com. And beyond that, if anybody has an encounter that they would like to report, no matter how big, no matter how small, no matter if it's extraterrestrial, paranormal, cryptid-related, weird anomaly happening, anything like that, anything, no matter how big or small, I want to hear about it. I want to be able to either discuss it on the show or possibly keep it between us and be able to maybe possibly investigate it, depending on how far you are from me. But if anybody wants to do that, you guys can get a hold of me through omm.encounterreports@outlook.com. Or you guys can go to the link tree, fill the submission form for that. That should be the third one down. Not the contact me, but the report and encounter submission form, of course. And if you can't get enough of what I do, don't forget to go and check out my other show, Bizarre Encounters, that I do over there with my awesome co-host, Oren Felix. We dive into cryptids, paranormal, UFOs, extraterrestrials, interdimensionals, folklore, any type of weird being whatsoever. I guarantee you at some point we will come around and we will definitely cover it over there. I have a lot of fun recording it. I'm sure you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. We do some interviews over there, of course, but the primary point of that show is that it's Oren and I deep diving into different things that we research. So a little bit different of a format than this show, but all the same, I definitely think you guys will enjoy it. And if you guys want to keep tabs on everything I do, don't forget to go and follow Open Minds Media across social media. I keep everything under that name to make it a little bit easier for myself as far as the YouTube, TikTok, and Discord go. All those are under Open Minds Media, of course. And if you guys want to support the show, a couple different ways to do so. Number one, of course, is to become a Patreon member. And over there, you'll get things such as early access to episodes, lives of episodes, ad-free episodes, live replays of episodes, which is the raw video format, exclusive merch store discounts, exclusive giveaways. And I'm always expanding over there. So if you guys have any suggestions that you guys like to see as far as the Patreon goes, definitely shoot me a message and let me know. And I do have the option for a 7-day free trial for the $5 tier. So if you guys want to check it out and see what it's all about, definitely recommend going and doing so. And if you guys like it, then you guys can stick around. And if you guys have any suggestions after checking it out, again, I'm always more than happy to hear them. And if anybody wants to donate to the show directly, make it so that I can get out and get to more events or possibly even build up to be able to do this full time, which is, you know, that's the dream. That's the intention, of course. You guys can donate through PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, or Red Circle, which is the RSS host for the show. And if you guys donate, let me know what you guys donated. If it doesn't give you some type of option to leave a personalized message, because, of course, I want to give you guys a big shout out in the show. Number three is to go and check out the Open Minds Media merch store. Over there, there's designs for Bizarre Encounters, Inquiries of All Reality, some other cryptid designs I created, and I'm always trying to expand that too. So again, if you guys have any suggestions as far as stuff you guys would like to see over there, such as more cryptid shirts possibly, definitely let me know and I can coordinate it and make it so that there's more of what you guys want over there. And like I said with the Patreon, you do get exclusive merch store discounts, so highly recommend going and checking out both of those, of course. And the fourth way you guys can support the show is through leaving reviews or ratings on iTunes, Spotify, or whatever other podcatcher that you use. And those will help to boost up the show in the algorithm and make it so that more people can see the show, keep spreading the community out and making it so there's more reach for the show. But the only way that's going to happen is with your guys' help. So any review, no matter what, hopefully 5 stars. If you guys leave an awesome review, I will read on the show and, of course, give you guys a big shout out. But if you guys have been listening for a while and you don't mind, you know, just give the show 5 stars. Leave a little short, sweet review. I don't mind at all. Anything like that is absolutely wonderful, and I love seeing that kind of stuff from you guys. And, of course, don't forget to share the show if you think anybody would really enjoy it, or if you think somebody would enjoy a particular episode. You guys can share some of the clips with them off the YouTube or the TikTok to make it so they might be interested in it, or even just play it at work, you know, and never know who might pick up on the show. Make it so that you guys have a little community of people that you guys can talk about all the different things that we discuss on the show at home, of course. And don't forget to check out a few of the different people who sponsor the show, of course. I know Squatch. I know that they recently dropped a brand new hat design that's like the lumberjack plaid with the cool Squatch logo on it. So I definitely enjoy the lumberjack style. So anybody out there that does enjoy that lumberjack style, I think it might be a perfect item to match your guys' outfits, of course. And beyond that, they got a lot of absolutely fantastic Squatch merchandise ranging from a lot of different types of designs, but definitely recommend going and checking out Rick and Hans, at least on Instagram too. They're always posting some interesting videos. I know that they do go out and they speak at certain events and stuff, so don't forget to go and check out I Know Squatch because they are absolutely fantastic. And for all your other cryptid related needs as far as merchandise and gear goes, don't forget to go and check out Joe over there at Cryptoteology. Always killing it and expanding it with all of his awesome designs. He has not just Squatch, but a lot of other things. So, you know, go to I Know Squatch for all of your just straight Squatch gear, and go to Joe over there at Cryptoteology for anything else that you could possibly think of as far as cryptids go, because I know he has almost every single base covered. So if there's a crypt that you're really, really into, I guarantee you that Joe over there has a shirt for it. And for all my paranormal investigators, don't forget to go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating tool. And I use it myself every single time I go out in investigations. It's my absolute favorite. If there's anything I'm going to have in my arsenal, that's probably going to always be the first thing that I grab. And if anybody has any questions on it whatsoever, you guys can hit up Barry over there at Dimension Devices. Super easy guy to talk to, and he is the guy that programs it, so he can help you with literally any possible question you could have on this thing. And if anybody wants to go and scoop one for yourself, don't forget to use my affiliate link. Greatly helps out the show, of course. And everything that I mentioned is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, podcaster and researcher Patrick Roy. How's it going today, man?
It's going great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure to have you on the show, man. I know that we tried to schedule something a while ago, and then you had a moment where you kind of stepped away from your show and didn't want to be a guest on anything. So I'm glad you came back around. I'm glad that you're continuing the podcast, because I always hate to see podcasters leave, man.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a learning process, and it's an experience that kind of learning as I go and figuring it out as I go. And I kind of hit on what works for me, you know, and just kind of building from there. So I got to a point where I'm only going to do what I can do myself. So I'm not dependent on, you know, anybody else or, you know, anything else, but whatever I can do to with my abilities and my skills, then that's by myself. If I can bring something to the table, and that was my goal. And I think I've done pretty well in that. I've done okay so far. And it's a work in progress, focusing on continuous improvement. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Kind of same with all of us, man. And at least the good news is, as far as podcasts go, you start making friends in the community. And if you have any technical questions, anything like that, there's always friends that are around to help you and answer any of your questions. So, I mean, that being said, if you ever need help with anything, man, just drop me a message and I can help you out as best as I can.
Yeah, appreciate it.
So I guess a good spot to get started with, before we get into who you are and what you do, since you brought up your podcast, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your show so they can come and check it out if it sounds like something they might be interested in.
Yeah, sure. My podcast is called Aliens for Beginners, and it's on Spotify, Apple, iHeart, all the main platforms. It's the name of the podcast is a little tongue in cheek. It's not really geared towards beginners, but there's some advanced stuff in there, but anybody can listen to it and enjoy it and take something away from it. And I've had young people, Gen Zers, who were never interested in the subject matter at all, come to me and say, "Hey, you know, these praying mantis aliens are really really cool. They're really interesting." And you know, so I piqued their interest in that kind of stuff. So yeah, folks who had no prior interest in this, just people I knew through work or whatever, started listening to it, and then they're asking me questions about this stuff. And so to me, that's a win. You know, if you pique someone's interest in something that they had no interest in before, then that's a success there in and of itself. So I do episodes on various alien type topics. I got a few episodes on the ET Soul Connection. I've got an episode on Antarctica, the Aerial School Incident I talk about. What else? Dr. Carla Turner, Skinwalker Ranch, all that stuff. And I also have a fictional series on there that I write myself. It's called The Carwood Lake Chronicles, and it's a fictional series that I release a chapter at a time. I write it a chapter at a time. And it's got a lot of nice little Easter eggs in there, stuff that people who are into this subject matter, if they listen to podcasts, if they read books, if they watch TV shows or documentaries, they're going to see stuff in there that's going to ring a bell. So I'll take a little thing that I heard on a podcast. For example, there was one incident, and I don't even remember what podcast it was from, but an experiencer talked about a guy that he worked with in maybe like a secret military installation that went by the name Thom. Not Tom, but Thom. Tall, skinny guy, always carried around a water bottle. And one day when he looked at this guy, he had the head of a praying mantis. So that's a character right there, right? I inserted Thom into, you know, one of the chapters, and I made him a physics professor. And so stuff like that. So there's little hidden gems in there. There's references in there to all kinds of stuff, the Aerial School Incident, Whitley Strieber, anything that you've heard in ufology. I'm just dropping little Easter eggs in there. It's kind of fun, and you know, to pick those up. But yeah, that's my podcast. Yeah, it's for beginners.
Definitely sounds fascinating to me, man. It sounds like I think it's a really good name, because it kind of sounds like a survivor's manual or something almost. Like,
right.
It says, you know, aliens for beginners, but I feel like it doesn't necessarily have that like ambiance to it. So honestly, I think it's a great name, and it seems to accompany kind of everything you cover, because it's like telling each individual story to kind of build a framework and foundation for people who may not be aware of the UFO / alien topic.
Yeah, and I have gotten a lot of compliments on the name of the podcast as well. So good stuff.
Positive and of course, for everybody that wants to check it out, I'll include the link in the show description, make it quick and easy. Definitely recommend checking it out and supporting other podcasters. And I guess another good spot to start is what exactly got you interested in the UFO slash alien topic and kind of led you up to the point where you decided that you want to start a podcast about it?
Well, that's a good question. I've always been into weird stuff like my whole life. So even as a kid, you know, dinosaurs and all that. And I've always been into the esoteric and the kind of weird things. I started listening to podcasts probably around maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago. I do a lot of driving at work, and I'm not a truck driver or anything. I'm a manager, but I do end up on the road a lot. And I started listening to podcasts, and I got my 4 or 5 or 6 go-tos that I would, that I, you know, Monday morning when I got in the car, I'd start out with, you know, number one, and then I'd work my way through. And, I actually found myself, you know, towards the end of the week, kind of running out of stuff to listen to in my little favorite group of podcasts. And, yeah, I know there's a million podcasts out there too, right? So I would poke around and I'd be like, yeah, I don't know. So I thought to myself, you know, if I'm in this position, then that means there's other folks in this position. And that means that there's still capacity out there to provide content. And then it's like the, you know, I thought, well, you know, I could do this. I could do a podcast. And then it becomes, I'm the type of person, once I set my sights on a goal, I'm going to achieve that goal. And that's how it became with the podcast. I'm like, I'm going to start a podcast. And that's that's what I'm going to do. So that was how the podcast came about. Was I thought, you know, if I can make a podcast that I would listen to, then that means that, you know, other folks would listen to it as well. So it's kind of,
so there's always a niche that needs to get filled.
Exactly.
And especially with certain types of personalities too. It's like everybody kind of connects with different types of podcasters. So you can have 10 different shows that are all in the same category, same kind of feel, but depending on the personality of the host, kind of varies depending on who wants to listen to what. And kind of the same thing with me, man. I listen to so many different shows that by like the end of the week, it's like I start running out of stuff. So I'm still always adding stuff to the bank. And I feel like there's not a lot of just strictly alien slash UFO podcasts. I mean, there's a nice chunk of them, don't get me wrong, but not ones that it's usually like guest type shows. There's not a lot that just kind of cover topics or have like a mix of it. So honestly, I think it's definitely a good niche and you just got to keep working at it and chugging along at it. And like I said, I'm glad you're back and doing it again.
Yep.
So I guess another spot, you said that when you were young, before we start building into all the different types of stuff that you like to cover on the show, you said that you were involved in some form of a cult. And I'd love to hear more about that and exactly what you figured out as you got older about it.
Yeah, sure. Now, well, let me tell you a little bit about myself, just because I am a regular guy. So I've been married for 35 years. I've worked for the same Fortune 500 company for 25 years. I'm a college graduate. I have 2 adult daughters and they're both college graduates. So, you know, just so, you know, because I'm into this weird stuff, I am basically just a regular guy. And, but yeah. In the early 1990s, let's see, I graduated from college in 88. I got married in 89 and I started a construction subcontracting business. And in doing this business, I had a handful of clients that are general contractors that I worked for. And I got this new client. He was a guy that I was aware of on the periphery. He had a good reputation. He was a solid guy, a straight shooter kind of guy. And those were the kind of clients I was looking for in that business. And so I was happy to get him as a client. And so we were working together. We worked together on some projects. And we were working together on a project one day, and a roofing project. And he started talking about some Bible stuff, some Bible quotes. And I did not have that background. I wasn't, my family didn't go to church. My mom's family was Catholic. We didn't go to church. And I wasn't really into the whole church thing, Bible thing. So, he started talking about some interesting stuff with the Bible that kind of made it sound pretty interesting to me. So for example, the, He's like, well, you know what happened in the Garden of Eden? I'm like, well, I guess they ate an apple or something. It's like, no, they didn't. They didn't eat an apple. They, Eve had sex with the devil, and
they say forbidden fruit. They never actually say apple in the Bible, which I always found kind of fascinating.
Right, and so she had twins by two different fathers, Cain and Abel, blah, blah. And I was like, well, that's, I never heard that before. So that was pretty damn interesting. And then some other stuff. And I said, I'm going to look into this a little bit more. And he's like, well, you know, this, and he gave me a Bible. He said, this book is a supernatural book. So in order to understand it, it has to be revealed to you. You can't just read it and understand it. So you've got to pray and ask for wisdom in this book.
Just out of curiosity, do you know what version of the Bible he gave you?
King James. Yeah.
King James version. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And, so I, all right. So yeah, definitely. I'll check this out. So I was so intrigued that I just started reading the Bible cover, you know, from the beginning. And, so later on, I run into him. He's like, hey, how's it going? How's your studies going? And I said, well, I just started reading the Bible from the beginning. He's like, well, you don't have to do that. He said, just use the Bible as a reference. And, he said, you know, there was a prophet, in the 20th century who was, his ministry was foretold in the book of Revelations. And he went around and he gave the end time message. I said, really? And, so he's like, yeah, he said, yeah, this guy, he's mentioned specifically in the book of Revelations, and he was the angel to the seventh church age. And, all of his sermons are available in book form and recordings. They recorded from the 1940s to the 1960s. They recorded all his sermons. I was like, okay. So he gave me some of these books and he said, just read these books. And, you can just use the Bible for reference, but read these books. They're the same as the Bible. I said, okay. So I started reading these books, and, something happened, when I started reading these books. So I made a connection with something, and, this person, was an event, this prophet he's talking about was an evangelist, who traveled the world from 1940s, early 1960s. I think he died in 64, 65. His name was William Branham. I don't know if you're familiar. Have you ever heard that name?
It sounds familiar, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, so I don't want to say sure.
Well, they're called Branhamites now, but they don't call themselves that. But this guy, he traveled the world, and he gave, he preached around the world. He was an evangelist, and there was a tremendous amount of supernatural stuff that surrounded his ministry. And you had, you know, your prophesying, visions, speaking in tongues, healings, blind people being able to see. There was a light, like a little pillar of light that followed him around, was photographed. There's a famous photograph of this pillar of light over his head. And so there was that was supposed to be the angel of the Lord or whatever. So he was going around giving this end time message, and all of the supernatural phenomenon followed his ministry. And from that, that spawned this movement, what they call it, the message. So they took all of his books, his sermons, they printed them all. And the headquarters is in where is it? Jeffersonville. Where the hell is Jeffersonville? But anyway, so they got all these books and recordings and they spread them all over the world. It's called The Message. And people call them Branhamites. But anyway, it's a very popular kind of a movement, a sect. And so anyway, while I was reading these books, I made contact with something. And it began by, it was kind of like, an energy or a presence that I felt physically. So this was, and anybody there are people out there who have experienced this, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But if you haven't experienced it, it's really hard to describe. But it's almost like a pure love energy. It's almost like a big supernatural hug. It's almost like a narcotic type of feeling. And so people would call this the Holy Spirit or whatever. So I made contact with this thing, and which I could feel its energy and its presence very strongly. And then what happened was, in reading these books, it started to open up a dialogue where, almost like a conversation, where I would have a question or a thought, and the next thing I picked up the book, and there was the answer to the question, or something about the thought. So there was this dialogue that began with something, which I assumed to be the Holy Spirit, Jesus Christ, like the Holy Spirit. So I assumed that was what it was. And this went on for, I was in and out of this for probably 10 or 12 years. Now, when you have an experience like that, it's really hard to, you know, if it's given to you in a certain context, this is the Holy Spirit, this is Jesus or whatever, and you have an actual experience like that, it's really hard to kind of discount that. I mean, when you have a real experience like that, you're gonna, you know, kind of, it holds you to an extent. So that explains a lot about why people get sucked into cults and they can't get out of them. So anyway, there is a lot of negative stuff that went along with this. And a part of it was the doctrine. So, for example, you know, women were to be subservient to men. Women could not preach. Women couldn't cut their hair. Women couldn't wear pants. there was all that part of it. And then there was a part of it was that basically you were here on this earth to be tried in a fiery furnace. So you are here basically to suffer and be purified, and then eventually maybe go in the rapture or something like that. And they talked a lot about the tribulation period. So the rapture would occur. This group they called the Bride of Christ, which was possibly them, presumably them, would go in this rapture. Everybody else would be here for the Great Tribulation, which would be nuclear Armageddon or whatever. I don't know. So there was this threat over everybody that, you know, am I going to make the cut? You know, am I going to make the cut and make it out of here? Is my family going to make the cut? And they believed that they were going to see this in their lifetime. So if you can imagine how stressful that is, if you have children, you have family members who you don't know if they're going to go in this thing or be left behind. And these people were buying this, you know, hook, line, and sinker. So it was a very negative kind of an atmosphere, very stressful. And
rolling through fear kind of a thing, right?
Exactly, exactly. There was a lot of fear in this. And I had a hard time reconciling, you know, my experience and this powerful, loving energy with all of this fear and all of this stuff. And the people that were in this, and it's very sad. I mean, there's people's lives were destroyed. People who just got sucked into this, and it just controls their whole life. So if you can imagine being a female brought up in one of these families, how that's going to influence your life going forward. And what if you never get out of there? And so it was a lot of negative stuff, a lot of negative stuff, a tremendous amount of fear mongering. I listened to sermons where they would describe like the Inquisition, like tortures of the Inquisition. Well, there's little children in the damn congregation, just really some really negative stuff. And I got to a point where I was like, you know, I never got like 100% into it. And I credit my wife with that, because she didn't buy into it. She came along to church with me once in a while, but yeah, she wasn't buying it, obviously, because the women stuff was, you know, she wasn't feeling that. But I eventually got away from it after 10 or 12 years fully. I got fully away from it. And it's a powerful thing if it gets a hold of you, especially when you have an early experience like that. So fast forward to, so this would have been like 1992 through maybe like 2004. So fast forward to around 2013, and I start getting interested in the occult and magic and stuff like that. And ironically, you're gonna laugh, but my wife and kids started watching the TV show Supernatural. I guess you're familiar with that. The Winchesters, yeah. And it was a goofy show, but a lot of the episodes were based on real lore, and it was the real lore that interested me. You know, it was the real stories that they based their episodes on, and I kind of got into it. I was like, this is interesting. So I would go, I would go and research, you know, the real lore behind the episode and stuff like that. So I got
you and me both, man. My lady was into it, and then I got into it because of the actual like tie-ins to things.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that shit was interesting. The show was goofy as hell, but what it was based on was they researched it fairly well. So so I got into that, and I started researching some of the stuff, and they had the mythology and the gods and goddess type stuff in there. And so I came upon an article, and I actually talk about this in one of my podcast episodes, on the goddess Inanna, who was an ancient Sumerian goddess, a very popular goddess of the ancient world. So she was known as Inanna, Ishtar, Isis, a bunch of different names for different times and regions. But there were temples all over the ancient world dedicated to this goddess Inanna. She was a very popular goddess of the ancient world. And
that was the one that Easter was based on, correct?
Correct, yeah. Yeah.
The whole like fertility god and like the fertility festivals.
Yeah. That was one of her names was Ishtar. I think her real name is actually Astaroth, but she's got a bunch of different names, bunch of different types of incarnation. But yeah, that was the goddess that Easter was supposedly based off of. So she was a goddess of fertility, war, very popular goddess, and her story is very, very interesting. In one of her stories, she actually, it's almost reminiscent of the crucifixion. She goes down into the underworld. She sacrifices her. She's basically crucified and resurrected. And, you're probably aware, there's all kinds of stories of the crucifixion, resurrection that predate the Bible. So anyway, I ran across this article about this goddess Inanna. It was the first time I encountered her. And, I was up late before I was getting ready to go to bed. I was having a couple cocktails, but nothing crazy. But, you know, so I'm reading this article, and I was like, wow, this goddess is pretty cool. You know, how cool would it be if we could have temples this goddess today, like in the United States, where people who chose could go and pay homage to this ancient Sumerian goddess? Like, that would be pretty cool. So, I don't even know why I did it. But I kind of spoke to this goddess, and I said something along the lines of what I just said. You know, I said something along the lines, you see like a pretty cool goddess. It would be really cool if you were, you know, around today and blah, blah. I just like a little prayer to this goddess. So I went to bed. The next morning when I got up, there was this extremely powerful energy in my room. That was exactly like the energy that I felt years ago in this Christian cult. And it was very much the same type of energy. It was this narcotic feeling, this love, pure love type of feeling, like a big hug.
And, is it like a motherly love kind of type of feeling? Like a, like a feminine love feeling?
Yeah, yeah. And it's, and like I say, it's really hard to describe. There are people out there, if they listen to this, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's really hard to describe to someone who's not experienced it. But a lot of people have experienced it. So I had this, so it was basically the same type of energy, same experience that I had in this other thing. And that wasn't lost on me, but I was like, it was so bizarre that I couldn't put them together. Like, how could this be? Here's this, they're two totally opposite things. You have this Christian thing and now you have this pagan thing, but it's basically the same type of experience. And I kind of just took it for, okay, you know, this is whatever. But that I experienced that feeling for that lasted for hours, and I experienced it many more times over the next 2 or 3 years. Now, I was heavily into meditation at that time. I kind of got away from it, but I think that may have facilitated that. So when you get into meditation, you can make contact with some things. And so I was into meditation at that time. So yeah, that energy lasted for quite a while. And I couldn't make sense of it in terms of my previous experience. And so I just kind of said, well, it is what it is. So anyway, in the course of my research, as I got more into the alien stuff, and I started reading like Carla Turner's books, and I started reading Linda Moulton Howe and stuff like that. And I began to run across examples of people experiencing this energy from extraterrestrials, from aliens, that aliens could give their subjects the same experience that I experienced. And I said, wait a minute. This sounds just like what I experienced here and what I experienced here. And
is it relatable to kind of like the Bledsoe case? Because it sounds kind of reminiscing of like kind of how they describe the feeling of it being like this positive, like angelic kind of feeling.
Yeah, I believe it is. And it's the Bledsoe case is an interesting case. But it's reminiscent of like the fundamentalist piece of it, where he really underwent a lot of abuse at the hands of his Pentecostal holiness congregation neighbors. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. The UFO of God, he goes into that a lot. I have some concerns about the Bledsoe case. And it ties in with what I'm talking about here. You know, so it's clearly that these extraterrestrials can convey this. They can convey this energy, this feeling. So what is the reason for doing that? I think there's different reasons. There's different factions. There's different types of beings with different agendas. I really think that in the case of this Christian fundamentalist cult, I believe that was just some type of an entity that kind of carved out a niche for itself with this group of people who were very spiritually minded, and giving them a real experience, and then kind of gathering together and kind of feeding off their energy, basically. And I don't know if you're familiar with the energy vampires type of things,
definitely.
But yeah. So I honestly think that that's all that was. I think it's just some sort of an entity who I have this theory. I called it rogue entity theory. So it could just be an entity that carved out a little piece for itself and started use this guy and this evangelist, and it started this movement and brought all these, because you have to be spiritually minded to get into something like that. So it takes a certain kind of person, and maybe a person with a lot of prana or chi or whatever you want to call it, and which I've been told that I have. So if they gather these people together, and it can, and kind of, like you say, use fear and all this stuff, and you juxtapose this fear with this love thing, that would generate a lot of energy for something to feed off of. And I kind of think that's what that was. Now, this with this goddess Inanna, I did not get that impression. There was nothing, and even just reading about those ancient gods and goddesses of the ancient world, they were not really into that kind of thing. They were more like light bringers. They wanted to kind of educate their human subjects and kind of bring them up, and it's more of a positive thing. But the thing with the concerns that I have, for example, with the Bledsoe case, is it sounds very familiar to this case, actually to the story of this evangelist that I'm talking about. So this evangelist was told by an angel that he was going to bring a message to the world. This evangelist had an extremely hard life. He also lost a young wife. His first young wife was killed. Chris Bledsoe lost a wife, a young wife. He talks about that in UFO of God. And Bledsoe's story is tied up in his Pentecostal holiness roots. And to understand that, like, he had people coming and throwing holy water on his property, throwing holy water on him, talking about him being possessed and that he had gone the way of the devil and all of this stuff. So it's the same thing in this church that I was involved in. Like, if you aren't toeing the line, if you were out of step, then, you know, maybe you were under the influence of the devil or whatever. And if you had a family member, a wife that was out of control, then that was a problem as well. And there were people who suffered. And what happens is, excuse me, I actually have pneumonia, by the way.
Oh, no worries. I was going to say, you got a slight cough. I just figured it out.
I'll tell you that story. But yeah, so the life and experiences of Chris Bledsoe, as he describes in his book, The UFO of God, very much a mirror the life and experiences of this evangelist, William Branham, and to the point that they had pretty rough time in their lives. They both lost their first wives when they were very young, and they both were visited by angelic beings, and they were both told that they were to bring a message to the world by these angelic beings. So that leaves you to wonder, you know, which of these things are correct? You know, what is going on here with these angelic beings and their messages? And I think I mentioned the Carly Turner's book, Masquerade of Angels, which details the life of Ted Rice, who was another experiencer who was contacted by these angelic beings. And a lot of times what these beings told him didn't exactly pan out. So I have to wonder about what is going on here with these beings trying to bring messages to the world through these people. And the personalities of Bledsoe and William Branham are also, they're just very similar, just very, they're both decent guy. Chris Bledsoe is a decent guy. I have no doubt about that. He just seems like a very humble, decent guy. And that's the same way this evangelist guy was as well. So the question is, are these people caught up in something that, you know, has some kind of an agenda that we don't really understand? And what exactly is it? Like, how is Chris Bledsoe going to bring this message to, you know, to the world? And there's the famous example of the lady who gave him this thing. Are you familiar with that story? She gave him this.
I don't think I am.
She gave him. So this, he calls her the lady, some angelic type of goddess type being who appeared to him and handed him this thing, which was like a, if you could imagine like a wiener dog without a head, legs or tail, and covered in bristles or something. And it was like alive and writhing. And he's like, what is this? And she basically told him, well, that's humanity. It's blind. It has no direction. And it's up to you to steer them in the right direction. So I don't know. When it comes to angelic beings, hanging around people, tell them to deliver messages, I'm a little suspicious. And to tie in with this disclosure thing, there's some interesting timeline kind of stuff here to kind of transition. When it comes to Chris Bledsoe, and if you start in 2016 with the Navy UAP videos, the New York Times article, the beginning of disclosure, so to speak, and I'm not a, I don't even like, I'm a person who doesn't need disclosure. I don't need the government or somebody to tell me what I already know, you know. And when
I mean, you don't want to believe half of what the government says to begin exactly, with anyways,
right? Yeah.
And, so, I mean, just before we get too far from it, I just want to make a quick comment too, not necessarily the Bledsoe, but at more so onto the televangelist you're referring to. You know, you think about this whole like demonic ritual concept, and it seems like one of the main things is that they get possessed by some spirit and they end up losing a close family member. So you kind of relate that to like a lot of the weird stuff that happens in modern day music, and it kind of runs along the same lines. And I'm not necessarily saying that, like I said, I don't necessarily want to bring Bledsoe into that whole type of thing, but it kind of makes you wonder if it's possible that, you know, either one, they're misinterpreting what these beings are that are portraying the message, especially in the televangelist, because he is instilling fear. And you get into that whole like energy vampire concept, and it usually relates more so to fear than anything. Or maybe there's some type of ritual rite that's involved as far as opening a means between the two worlds to make it so that something can get from the other side. And maybe that, like, assumably it's not going to come from an angelic being, but maybe it's possible that something has to get lost in order to open up that doorway. But at least my mind, just kind of seeing everything that transpired around him specifically, it doesn't seem necessarily angelic, but maybe something else that tried to come across as angelic, but not necessarily angelic, exactly. Especially again, relating with a lot of the more modern day things with a lot of celebrities supposedly selling their soul, quote unquote, and losing somebody very close to them, and then being possessed by the spirit of something else when they perform, when they act, which, you know, I'm assuming this televangelist said that he felt the Holy Spirit right before he started doing his sermon. So again, it kind of plays along those lines, at least in my mind.
Yeah, totally. And like, I'm not even like an angel and demon kind of guy. So I think that's a human creation that we use to deal with things we don't understand. So human beings are kind of programmed to need things in black and white, good and evil, God and the devil, right and left, you know, Republican and Democrat, liberal and conservative. And I really think that this whole concept of this good and evil battle, I don't even know that there is something like it. It could just be a bunch of different entities with different agendas just doing their thing, you know, and we're the ones who are framing it as demonic, and because we need to label it somehow. So this is demonic, this is angelic, this is God, this is the devil, when it could just be, you know, beings that are out there just doing their thing, you know, whatever they need to do to survive, whatever, to feed off of whatever energies they feed off of. And we're the ones that are labeling it these different ways.
You think, or you can get into the whole Collins Elite concept that anything that's extraterrestrial is actually just a demon disguising itself.
But, I know, right?
I mean, yeah. I definitely like to entertain all different possibilities.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And you get into the whole thing with, there are people in like high up in the military and who believe that the whole ET thing is demonic. And I guess apparently that was something that was kind of stymieing disclosure, is the fact that some of these generals or whatever, people in the CIA, people in government felt that this was totally demonic. These were demonic forces at work. But when he considered the Bledsoe, and he got put through the ringer with his community there, he had an illness, he had a debilitating illness, which also William Branham had a debilitating illness. He was cured of this illness, supposedly by the aliens, only to get another kind of illness. And that's the theme also in these Christian circles, is someone gets healed of something, then they immediately get sick with something else. So Bledsoe was healed of Crohn's disease, and only to get rheumatoid arthritis. So what's up with that? So the rheumatoid arthritis was just as bad as the Crohn's disease. So I don't know if you're familiar with the story. He was out in the woods fishing with his son and some buddies, and he went off by himself, and he was in a really low state of affairs. He lost his business. He was destitute. He was sick, and he kind of was at the end of his rope, and he said a prayer or whatever. And these red orbs appeared, these crafts appeared, and beings came out. They landed, and beings came out, chased him down. And they told him, hey, look, we're here to help you. So anyway, I think he had some missing time issues in there as well. But he was healed of his Crohn's disease, only to end up getting rheumatoid arthritis. And now he was, when he went public with his story, the Discovery Channel, he was talking to a guy in MUFON. MUFON, I believe they arranged with the Discovery Channel to do a documentary, or maybe it was an episode of one of their series. I don't remember exactly what it was, but they set him up. They told him they were coming to his house, and they said, hey, we need you to come to the hotel. He went to the hotel. They dragged him in the room and gave him a lie detector test a bunch of different times till he messed it up. And they kind of abused his family. And the MUFON was kind of in on it, and they really treated them badly. And so this poor guy just got grief about his whole experience until CIA type started to kind of cozy up to him. And so by 2015, he had met retired Colonel John B. Alexander. So he had these, now he has all these CIA friends. So the question is, why are all these CIA types, cozying up to Bledsoe? Well, they're cozying up to Bledsoe because they realize that he can do what they can't do. They think that he can do what they can't do, which is make contact with these extraterrestrials. So that's something they've been trying to do, or they want to do, but this guy can do it. So now he's their buddy. So that's in 2015. He was by 2015, I think he was pretty much in pretty tight with these types. And if you look at the timelines, 2016, you've got the Navy UAP video, you've got the New York Times article, you got the beginning of this quote-unquote disclosure movement. And around the same time, what else happened in 2016? Well, Brandon Fugel purchased Skinwalker Ranch from Bigelow. You heard the expression, all roads lead to Bigelow. So Bigelow, having owned Skinwalker Ranch for a couple of decades, 2016, he sells it to Brandon Fugel. And then in 2018, you have the Jeremy Corbell documentary on Skinwalker Ranch. And then by 2019, you've got that series on the History Channel coming out. So if you look at this 2016 time frame, and now you've got Grush and all these other things coming out, I think there's a real effort at controlled disclosure here. And I think that Bledsoe might be getting kind of sucked into that as well. Bledsoe is tight with Diana Pasulka, who wrote American Cosmic, and also Encounters, more recently Encounters. And these, again, Diana Pasulka is another one who was able to get really cozy with these invisible college people, CIA types, was taken out to like crash sites, got access to the Vatican archives. She's a professor of theology. And so she's very smart, very bright lady. So part and parcel of this is also this kind of religious movement. So there's, it almost seems like there's an attempt to frame this, the phenomenon, in religious terms. And what
I'm really glad that you said that, because I was exactly going to mention that even Skinwalker Ranch has a bunch of Mormon connections. And of course, it's different religions, but there's all this religious undertone to everything. And depending on a matter of perspective, either you see it as extraterrestrial or you see it to being connected to some type of religion in some way, shape, or form, down to what we were saying as far as the ritualistic aspect of things. And I mean, even just UFOs being conceived as like the chariots that they talk about in a lot of different religious books, like there's something weird to it and definitely interconnecting. And I've always said, I feel like a lot of it is just a matter of perspective, but we may all be talking about theoretically the same things.
Yeah, I agree. And it seems like with this controlled disclosure, it seems like they're kind of bending themselves into pretzels to kind of frame it in this whole religious context. And if you think about, well, what was one of the major concerns about, you know, people finding out that we're not alone in the universe? Well, the religions are going to collapse. So how do you address that? Well, you tie it in with the religion. You make it the UFO of God. You know, you see what's in the Vatican archives, and you tie this all together. Then you can keep those religions propped up because they were actually a part of this thing the whole time. And I think
just another weird way to think about it too is that it could just be also depending on like what people's perception of the world around them. These different beings could just be projecting their image in different ways, because even within like the Bible, looking at it from that perspective, you know, like the actual true form of an angel, like a human can't perceive, so they come in this angelic, like human-like form. So, I mean, if you're looking at it as these things could all be some type of interdimensional beings, and just the looking at it through a religious perspective, you see it through this way, and looking at it through a UFO perspective, you see it in this way. You know, they could all be the same beings, just changing their image and what they look like to society to fit into what would make the most sense to society at that given time, where, you know, back in the day you had golden chariots, now you have silver UFOs, and rather than this angelic, what they'd call the angelic being with this, which is clearly some type of interdimensional being coming across in like a human form, it makes more sense now to the modern day person for something to come from the sky and be an extraterrestrial looking being, some type of alien gray type of being.
Yeah, well, totally. These beings can totally project an image for you to see that they want you to see. That's one of their known abilities. And Carla Turner talked about that as well in Masquerade of Angels and her different books, in abduction scenarios. there are many, many examples of these beings being able to change, not necessarily change their form, but change the way that you see them. And there is a, I think it might be on Into the Fray, an episode on Into the Fray. There was a guest on there who, a really amazing guest, and I can't remember the name of the episode, but she talked about her experiences throughout her life. And in one example that she gave, she was lying in her bed, and a gold disc came into the room and materialized next to her bed as a beautiful woman with long flowing blonde hair, you know, angelic looking creature, person. And she said something to the being of, well, I know that's not what you really look like. And the woman said, well, if you want to see what I really look like, look out the window. And she looked out the window and there was a praying mantis. So there's many examples of these beings can make you see what they want you to see. And even examples of reptilians being able to present themselves as Nordics and different stuff like that. So
I'm glad you brought that up, because even skinwalkers too, / shapeshifters, that's always been my theory on it, is that they're not actually physically changing their form, but rather just projecting an image of what they want you to see onto you. So, you know, by wearing the skin of a wolf, for example, now you can make somebody perceive you as that wolf. And I don't know if you've ever heard my reptilian experience, but for all the listeners that may not be familiar with it, there was one day I was at Myers a long time ago. It was like the beginning of the pandemic and everything. And I was just ranting and raving about something in line. And this lady turns around to me and lowers her mask. And I see this like reptilian overlay over her face. And then she puts it back up and turns and keeps talking to the person she was talking to. So ever since then, I've been pretty convinced that it's, again, just a matter of perception, and these things aren't actually like physically changing form. And this goes across the board for all of these weird types of beings and entities.
Yeah, it's almost like, what's that movie with Roddy Piper? They Live.
Yeah. Yep,
you
exactly.
Some glasses to put on, you can see them. But yeah, totally. They can, especially with the reptilian types, I've heard many examples of that. So basically they can project this human image over top of their real image or whatever somehow. And I think David Icke talks about that a little bit. I've heard, Linda Moulton Howe talk about that as well. But I'm not like, I don't like to kind of stereotype these entities, like, you know, all grays are this, all reptilians are that, all Nordics are this. And a lot of that goes on. I just don't know. I don't like to, because generally people say, well, reptilians are bad. You know, Nordics are good. Of course, the Nordics are, you know, attractive blonde people. And reptilians look like alligators.
I mean, it could be the same as people, though. Every single person has the same intentions. Yeah. It's, you can't say the entire race is inherently good or bad.
Right.
It's each individual one's idea, unless it's like a hive mind type of creature where they're all thinking the same, because there is some type of basic hive mind to it. Assumably, every single one you encounter is going to have different experiences and different intentions on what they're trying to do when they're making contact with you.
Yeah, exactly. So, kind of getting back to the disclosure thing, I've never understood the idea of needing this headline that we're not alone in the universe. I don't need a headline for that. I know that anybody with common sense and does a little bit of research would know that. And I think even the very term of disclosure, it implies that you are giving power to something to provide you this information and this knowledge. And I don't think that's a good idea, to give power to whatever controlling entities there are, because they're only going to tell you what they want you to know and what is useful. Whatever is useful for them to let you know, that's what they're going to do. And
it's disclosing it's controlling the narrative rather than actually disclosing the information about the specific topic.
Yeah, they've hit a tipping point where it's time that, you know, they have to kind of drip some of this stuff out, and that they're going to drip out what they need to know. They're going to use people, unwitting types of folks. So you may have players in there who are, you know, they're part of it. You may have just unwitting folks who are just kind of being taken advantage of.
Wonder if they trickle out the information to try to get information in themselves. So if they kind of just release a little bit, the hope is that people will come to them with more information. Yeah. So it's kind of just like letting it out to pull more in.
Yeah, that could be as well. Totally. Are you familiar with the Soul Foundation conference, UAP conference?
No, I'm not actually.
Yeah, this is, I got on Twitter, X back in October, and my God, dude, those people on there are crazy, but they're all into stuff that, you know, like you don't even see on Instagram, but they're all wrapped up in this disclosure stuff. Well, there was this conference, Stanford University, the Soul Foundation, which I guess is a think tank of some sort. So they issued invites to certain people to come and come to this conference. It was a UAP conference. So it's a UFO phenomenon conference at Stanford University kind of discuss the phenomenon. There were guest speakers, there were attendees, and so different people were invited, but then some surprising people were not invited. These folks seem like they were handpicked. Yeah, and I had this quote. I can't remember what it was, but it was about musicians, like pop stars. Like, they're not picked for their talent anymore. They're picked for having a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. I think that's almost what this Soul Foundation was about. And so you had this, they handpicked all these people from, there were podcasters. There's a podcaster who has only had a podcast for like a couple years, was invited to this thing. I don't think Linda Moulton Howe was invited to this thing. Richard Dolan, I believe, was a presenter at this thing. But this thing was kept under wraps. They were not allowed to take video or recordings of it. Again, it just kind of like, I think the Diana Pasulka was there. It all smacks of, you know, this controlled disclosure and framing this narrative. And just like anything else, you have this select group, like an elite, that always rises to the top of any movement. And then they're controlling it for everyone else, you know, you and me. They're releasing the narrative for you and me. They're framing the narrative for you and me. So the deep, dark secrets that are out there, they'll never let that stuff out. I mean, there are people who know about things that have to do with the human soul and extraterrestrials, have to do with the origins of humanity, that they can't let out because it's just too much. So they're framing the narrative. They're definitely trying to wrap it up with religion to kind of keep that they don't want the whole religion crashing down because of disclosure coming about. So they're kind of, definitely there's a concerted effort to tie this in, wrap this up in religion as well. So it's, yeah.
Just playing devil's advocate on this one too. Considering that a lot of these elitists seem to be involved in some like heavy occult concepts, it almost makes you wonder if it is the opposite, that they're not trying to intentionally wrap the UFO stuff into it, but rather they're actually trying to trickle some of their occult practices into disclosure so that, because maybe there is the truth to it, that it is all occult based to begin with. Because I mean, like, if these controlling powers, the elites, are fully aware of everything that's going on in the universe realistically, and they're still heavily linked into occult practice, there has to be something to that. Otherwise it would also disprove their religion unless they're also trying to connect it into religion so that it makes sense to them and they can keep continuing on with their occult practices.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Fair point. Now, occult practices are like anybody can do occult practices. The elites, not just the elites. Anybody can do some research and can do occult practices. Anybody can do some research and learn how to basically do magic and apply it in your daily life or whatever. But when you get into, like you say, a group that is kind of putting it all together and gathering their energies up for one agenda, yeah, that can be pretty powerful. Absolutely.
I mean, it may not even necessarily be like magic like we perceive it. I've talked about this a few times on the show that, you know, it took a matter of time before alchemy turned into chemistry. I think a lot of these like occult mind control concepts that people perceive as magic are actually just the master understanding of psychology.
Right.
So maybe rather a lot of these occult practices, rather than being quote magic, it's actually a science that hasn't had a name planned out for it yet necessarily. And it may not actually be religious tied, but rather that there is a science base to it. Like a lot of like the occult stuff has to do with like opening doors, opening portals, so to speak. You know, maybe that's not magic, but rather a science that they're opening portal doors into other dimensions and other realities, because it seems like everything's kind of two-sided. Like I said, that a lot of these like angelic beings, a lot of these aliens, for example, all seem to be interdimensional beings. So again, maybe it's just a matter of knowing how to open up that doorway, and then these occult practices will just turn into some type of physics, for example.
Yeah, well, magic is very scientific, and it's all about energy. So it's totally science.
A matter of understanding, yeah, and giving it a exactly. new name instead of it being a magic name.
In its simplest form. Magic is just the raising and the directing of energy through intention. And that's all it is. And energy is just like it's electricity. It takes the path of least resistance. So yeah, magic is totally, totally scientific. It's absolutely based in science. And so there are people who know this and these are the occult, you know, practitioners that you're talking about.
See, and that's what I mean. Even like the buildup to that is just a master understanding of psychology, because they learn how to control people in order to portray whatever message they're trying to do. Because exactly. Even when you get in these occults, only the high ups really understand everything that's going on. Everybody that's below them thinks they're involved in something bigger, but realistically, it's just a method of control over these people and breaking them down to a point where they can make them do whatever they want to do and die for their secrets.
Right.
So again, it's like it all kind of ties back to there may not even be necessarily like magic as most people perceive it, even within like Freemasons, but rather that it's just a master understanding of psychology and how to completely manipulate somebody to the point where they'll die for your secrets.
Right.
But I guess did you say that you had some other experiences too that you wanted to share too?
Well, as far as experiences, when I was into meditation, I got into, I made contact with all kinds of crazy stuff. And, I started using like a pendulum to, kind of communicate. And that was pretty interesting. Cause I read online how to make this pendulum, and I was sitting at my desk one day, and I was like, all right, well, I had some black thread and I had like an old dried up bone or something. And I made this pendulum and I put it out there and I said, is this okay? And the thing started going and I immediately put it down. I was like, holy shit. And, so yeah, I had this whole, experience with this pendulum that I, conveyed into, like kind of like a Ouija board. So you could, rather than use a planchette, use a Ouija board with the pendulum, and could kind of get different messages and stuff like that. But the only issue with that is, you don't know who or what you're talking to a lot of times, and then it gets a little out of hand with different beings wanting to chat with you, and you kind of have to shut it off. So that was one experience that I got into with meditation. And I had a lot of different encounters, like with energies. So if a particular being showed up, like there were different beings that you could get different energies off of. There was one that almost, it, like whenever it was around, it almost felt like you were on a roller coaster, like in the pit of your stomach, that kind of thing. So there was that kind of stuff. I have seen some UFOs, just kind of your typical fleeting UFO experiences. I saw a couple of the big red orangish orb type UFOs. I saw one just went out my drive. I like took the trash out one night, and there it was. It moved. It would move a short distance, kind of leave a trail of itself. That trail would catch up with the main object, and it would move again, kind of like an inchworm or something. It did that like four times, and of course, I didn't have my phone with me, and so I'm standing there, I'm debating, you know, do I go try to get my phone, or do I just stand here and watch this thing? So obviously, I went in to get my phone, and obviously, by the time I came out, it was gone. So, you know, fleeting kind of UFO stuff like that. I did have recently a pretty interesting experience with an orb. So I was sitting in my living room, and I get some strange aircraft flying around my house. And there were some what would clearly sounded like jet fighters flying around. And that happens occasionally. So I was like, what the hell are they doing? So I'm going to go out and try and get some video. So I grabbed my iPhone, went out on the back deck, and my iPhone is dead. So I'm like, all right. So I hear these jets flying around, and I see this orb. It's just like a white kind of orb, and it's flashing. It's staying still. And so just kind of watching it, I hear the jets. They sound like they're flying off. So I said, okay, I'm going to go in and get my my work phone. And I came back out, and I got some video where you can hear the jets flying off. And you can see this orb still in the sky. It's kind of a good distance away. It's stationary. It's blinking, white, just white, kind of random blinking. And so I started taking some video of it, and I got this, I don't know if you want to call it a download or whatever, but I got some information from this thing, and it was pretty interesting. It's like it's just so hard to describe, because you think in terms of something talking in your head telepathically. But it's not like that.
It's just like a thought projected in your head. It's rather
an entire
like,
thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming into your brain. Yeah. Totally.
It's not like
that.
Somebody word by word telling you a thought. It's just an idea and a concept is put into your head.
Exactly. Exactly like that. Exactly like that. And, the idea was, it had to do with, basically that this, well, whatever it was, it did not like the fact, the concern was that, folks taking videos of these things just for the sake of taking videos of them and putting them online. And the thought was that there's something more to it than that. And the thought also was given to me that the timing of this happened when they knew my phone was dead, so that I wouldn't be able to take the video. But I did get my other phone, and I came out and I took the video. So the thought was, not only just people taking videos to take videos and put them online and say, look at this video I took, but also all the hoaxes out there. So it was like one big thought about, I guess basically, maybe social media or something, and all these videos and stuff that people put on there. But it was, they did not like the idea of people taking videos of UFOs just to put them online, and that was it. They also did not like the idea of the hoaxed videos, and all of that being kind of mixed together in one conglomeration of videos, that there was more to that. And another thing that came in line came along with this, kind of ties in with what we were talking about, was that there were people basically being selected unwittingly for the purpose of to be used to kind of this to be used for this controlled disclosure that we've been talking about. So that was part of that thought. So I actually I said to this orb, I said, well, can you shoot off or anything? Like, I wanted to make contact with it. And when I asked that, it blinked out. And then it came back a few seconds later. So then when I looked at the video later, it did shoot off. You just couldn't, you can just barely see it shooting off. It looks like it's blinking out, but it did shoot off. So I made a deal and I said, look, okay, I'm not going to share this video. I got the video. I said, point taken. And, I'm not going to put this on my Instagram or anything like that, out of respect for the message that I got. Now I may, I think I'd be okay, like at some point posting it. Like, I have a YouTube channel with absolutely nothing on it, you know, and maybe with an explanation of what I just told you or something like that. I think I would probably be okay with that. I think I would still be within my deal, but I kind of made an agreement. I said, okay, I understand. And, you know, out of respect for you, you know, giving me this information, I'm not going to do, the thing that you don't like. So that was kind of an interesting little experience there.
I've actually heard that from a few people, that one, you're supposed to, like, it kind of gets into that weird paranormal aspect to it, where it's like, I've heard from a few people that you have to, like, ask permission before recording these things, that only certain people are intended to see these things, that they don't actually like being recorded, and that if they are letting you record them, it's for a whole other intention, and possibly even slowly kind of trickling in to let people know that they're there. But I've heard it from a couple different perspectives, so I'm glad that you brought that up, because you're not the first person that I've heard that from. And connecting back into the first thing that you mentioned, I wanted to ask, have you ever heard of Dan Baldwin or George Sewell? Because both of them actually made contact with extraterrestrials through using pendulums. So might be an interesting guest that you could possibly have on your show, or, you know, maybe even talk to them a little bit about what you were doing, and maybe you guys can start connecting some dots together as far as, like, using a pendulum to make contact with not just the paranormal side of things, but also the extraterrestrial side of things.
I have not heard of those guys. Did you have one of them on as a guest recently?
Yeah, episode 173, I had them both on together.
Oh, okay. No, I remember seeing your Instagram post about that episode, but I hadn't listened to it yet. But yeah, totally, I'll check that out. Yeah, the pendulum.
So I'll have to send you their information too. There might be a good guest for you guys to bounce back and forth, since a lot of you guys, have the same experiences with using the pendulum.
Well, what's interesting, I had a friend who was kind of into this stuff a little bit, and one of these entities I got to know pretty well. And I knew it was a female entity. I knew her name and everything. And I talked to her frequently. And I was just like, do you want to go hang out with this guy for a while? And it was like, yeah. So I actually gave him the pendulum that I used to communicate with this entity. And he was able to communicate with this with this being. And he would tell me messages that he got and everything like that. So I just, this entity went and hung out with a friend of mine for a while. So that was, I think that might have spooked him a bit, because
I was going to say, it makes you wonder what it might actually be on the other side.
he kind of got away from it. Now I haven't messed with the pendulum for a while, because it just got, like, I would get a lot of, like, false stuff through it, And then, like you say, I don't know who, and I wouldn't know who in the world was, you know, on the other side of it.
It's like playing a chat roulette without a camera on.
Yeah. So,
but, even without a microphone on, because you can't even really get an idea of the voice. Just imagine chat roulette with just text.
it was interesting. You know, you definitely make contact with the other side or whoever. They were aggressive. There were a couple aggressive type entities who would, I mean, they would really make that thing go. I mean, they practically spin it around. It was pretty interesting, but I wouldn't recommend it, you know, for the long term.
Especially not in your house, because otherwise you might end up pulling some attachments in that you don't really want to have at your house. But I guess kind of starting to wrap up towards the end. And of course, I'd love to have you back on at some point, because this has been an awesome conversation and absolutely fascinating. And I'd love to get some more of your opinions and thoughts on different things. But I always like to wrap up the show with words of wisdom. So if there's any words of wisdom you could bestow on the listeners, what might it be?
Words of wisdom. Well, if folks are into these strange phenomena, whether it's UFOs, ETs, whatever, just use some discernment, you know, believe half of what you see, none of what you hear. Trust your gut. Don't believe everything that comes down the pike. Because there's one thing that Diana Pasulka said in her book, American Cosmic, that was kind of stood out to me, was she said that the world of ufology was a carnival of hoaxes, misinformation, or hoaxes, consumerism, and misinformation. And I think it's really important for folks who are into this to be responsible and exercise some judgment and recognize, you know, like Linda Moulton Howe referred to what she called a 16-layer chess game. That's what this is. And, you know, just be responsible, exercise judgment, trust your gut. Don't believe everything that comes along, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater either. And it's a treacherous road, but you know, there's a lot of rewards there. But I guess that's my words of wisdom.
I definitely agree with you there. There's a lot of misdirection, and I say it frequently on the show that people need to learn how to trust their gut on certain things and throw out certain things. You have to discern it for yourself. You can't just take somebody else's blind opinion on something. You have to create your own conclusions and thoughts and theories and ideas on anything based on the information that you have.
Excuse me, here I'm going. But what was I going to say? That it's not a popular position to take. You can disagree with one person, you know, like on one thread or whatever, and next thing you're a troll, you're a debunker or whatever. So being responsible and exercising discernment, it's a challenging position to take, because when people are throwing their stuff out there, they want you to swallow all of it. And that's just, like I say, that's just not me. That's not me. So
you I'm know, with
for,
you on that
for
one.
Example, I, you know, take Bob Lazar. To me, I find Bob Lazar very believable. My gut tells me that he's telling the truth. When you listen to him talk, and he only talked about what he knew. If he didn't know something, then he'd tell you. I didn't have any experience with that. I only worked on this. This is what I saw. This is what I know. And he only talked about what he knew. Now, if you take other folks that are making claims, for example, William Mills Tompkins worked on the Apollo program and other things. This is the guy who says that there are extraterrestrials waiting on the moon who gave the Apollo 11 astronauts the finger. I don't think I believe that. I'm sorry. You know, I just don't think I believe that. This is the guy who said he had a Nordic secretary for 3 years when he worked at NASA. I'm like, really? So you had a hot chick Nordic secretary? You have this advanced being who's, you know, working as your sector. You know, come on, dude. So anyway, it
sounds like a sci-fi comedy something.
So yeah,
I was going to say with Bob Lazar, at least like my opinions on it. I mean, everybody obviously create your own ideas and opinions on things, but the guy never made money off of his stories. Anytime he got paid to speak at events, he would put him back into like charities for teaching kids science, things like that. So he never really made any money off the story whatsoever. The dude had a lot of issues with just going about life in general because all of his information got deleted. And on top of that, he never was like, oh yeah, I saw aliens. There was aliens here. There's aliens there. Like, I don't know, just more things that kind of get included that make the story more believable as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And the fact that he talked about there being the big openings in the sides of different like mountains and cave dwelling areas. And, you know, people have found weird things like that on Google Maps too, ever since he told his stories and encounters. And there's been firsthand encounters of people seeing these big things that look like doors that are in the side of mountain sides and stuff. So just, again, more like connecting factors that, at least for me, it's a believable story. But again, everybody create your own opinions on it.
Yeah, and he tried to stay under the radar for, you know, decades as well. He didn't want to talk about that. So he didn't talk about this until, he didn't come back out and start talking about it until just recently. I mean, he stayed mum for quite some time. But, so, yeah, I'll tell you the story of my real quick before we go, and you can include this or not; it doesn't matter. But I've had a harrowing holiday season here. So, Monday night, I was carrying some Christmas totes up and down the stairs, and late Monday night, I started having some pain in my chest. I thought, oh shit, I pulled something, right? And I pulled shit before in my chest carrying shit around. I was like, all right. So I tried to sleep it off. Tuesday morning, it's worse. Ah, shit. I said, I'm going to go into the urgent care center just to rule out any heart issues, right? So I go in there and I tell them what's going on. The doctor comes in, you know, after I pay my $50 copay, and that's when I got decent insurance. It's like, well, I can't rule out heart issues. I said, don't you have an EKG or something you can hook me up to? He's like, well, that doesn't tell me anything. Like, all right. So he's like, you know, you got to go to the ER. I said, all right, great. So I head out to the ER, and we had this torrential rainstorms over the weekend. So the small city that I live near, the main six-way highway that goes through the city, about a half mile of it was shut down. It was flooded. So I'm trying to get to the ER. And there's a detour. So I turn into this detour and I see the longest single file line of fucking cars I've ever seen. And my chest pain's getting worse. So I'm like, all right, this is it. I'm going to die in this detour. This must be my time. So anyway, I made a U-turn. I got out of the detour. I went almost all the way back home, went back into town the other way, got into the ER. And, so go up to the window there, and the, you know, lady asked me what's going on. I said, I'm having chest pain. Now, if you ever go to the ER and you want to assert yourself to the front of the line, just tell them you're having chest pain. Because I was in a room and I was hooked up to EKG in like 3 minutes, and I wanted to take a leak. I said, I'm going to hit the men's room. They're like, nope, get in that room. And I was hooked up to the EKG. That the other guy said didn't tell him anything. And, so, you know, they hooked me up to the EKG. They wheel me into a room. They let me take a leak, and then they want me to pee in a cup. So I go and that's a challenge, you know, for me. Like, I'm a big guy. Like, I can't see that fucking cup down there. Right. So I pee in the cup, and then you get, you know, when you really got to go, then you got to try to figure out, Do you start in the cup or do you end in the cup? Because I'm going to overflow this cup. But either way, you got to figure out how to start halfway, stop halfway, right? So anyway, I get back in the room and the doctor comes and he says, what do you know about AFib? I said, well, I don't know. I've heard about it on TV. And he said, you've got AFib pretty bad. And I said, oh, okay. So he said, but, you know, we can treat it with medication, everything. I'm like, okay. So they give me some IV medication for the AFib, but they take blood work, they give me x-rays, And then before he leaves, like the guy says, he's like, are you coughing at all? I said, well, maybe just a little bit. He said, well, you've got pneumonia. So my chest pain was from the pneumonia, and the aphid was just like a bonus, you know? So, yeah. So I had the chest pain was from the pneumonia. Like, it was hard to breathe, like just to breathe in. So I was like, oh, awesome. So now I've got, as a result of this AFib, I'm going to have two more meds to add to the five meds that I'm already on. So, I'm 58. So, years ago, I swore that Big Pharma wouldn't get me, but now I'm the fucking poster child for Big Pharma, totally. But, so yeah, I got two more meds to get on. So that's all part of getting home. So anyway, when I got home, I told my wife and kids, I said, I bet that AFib is from the vaccines. Now they're not anti-vaxxers. So, my daughter said, she said, you're at a comfortable stage of crazy, but just don't push it. So she wasn't having the anti-vax stuff, but yeah,
safe and effective, right?
Yeah, right. So, but I don't know, man. I think it might have something to do with that vaccine.
Well, I guess all those kind of things will only come out in the wash, man. It just takes time. And we'll start seeing stuff pop up, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty disturbing things, but oh well. Hey, it's been fun. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And before we start wrapping up completely here, for anybody that wants to come and find you on the internet, find you on Instagram, find your podcast, all of that, let them know where they can come and find you.
Okay, so the podcast is called Aliens for Beginners, and it's on Spotify, Apple, iHeart, all the various platforms where you get your podcasts. My Instagram is at Aliens for Beginners Pod, and I'm also on X as at AFB Podcast. I think I have all of 13 followers on there. But I'm not on the premium. I'm just on the basic. I'm on X. But, that's where you find me.
And, of course, to all the listeners, I will include all of the links down in the show notes so you guys can find it quick and easy. And, Patrick, I thank you for making the time to come on today. And I'm looking forward to next time we get to come around to it, man.
Sounds good, man.
If you guys enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. And of course, share this episode word of mouth if you think that there's anybody else in your life that would greatly enjoy this episode. Or if you think that there's somebody that may not enjoy it, why not? Just share it with them. You never know how their mind might come around and they might actually start getting into all these different ideas and concepts. And if anybody wants to report an encounter, you guys can do so through OMM, encounterreports@outlook.com. Or you guys go to the link tree, fill the submission form specifically for that, and we can discuss if you want to have it talked about in the show, you want to keep it just between us, you want me to come out and investigate it, but the only thing that's going to happen is if you guys report your encounters, of course, to me. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me for any other reason whatsoever, you guys can do so through social media. Instagram is the one that I'm the most active on. Or you guys can get a hold of me at inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com. Or go to the link tree, fill the submission form that says contact me, of course, and that will go directly to my email. And make sure you guys check your spam or junk folders. Make sure nothing gets missed because I do respond to every single message that I get from you guys. And everything that I mentioned, all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.